Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Lever Ball Show. And on this episode, I'm joined by Tyler Murray. And Tyler has done a lot in the world of sports broadcasting, from, you know, doing college games on ESPN Plus to, you know, working with various MLB organizations, most recently the Red Sox organization. The last time I talked to you, I believe you had been doing some stuff in the Blue Jays system, but yeah, now doing some stuff in the Sox system, doing college games, did some PA, if I remember correctly, for the Nationals in spring training. So a little bit of everything, but you know, Tyler, I know you're a busy guy, but welcome.
Yes, Lev, thanks so much for having me, man. And I appreciate you bringing me on here. A lot of cool guests you got lined up. So it's cool to be on the list.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about before I started recording, you know, I interview lots of different types of people. So, you know, I've had, you know, different athletes and broadcasters on this podcast. I was also interviewed musicians, I was telling you beforehand, I recently had the Maroon 5 former drummer Ryan Dusick on this. As far as I know, Tyler, you're not in any rock bands. You're strictly a broadcaster, although I don't know.
Correct. We do have that old video game called Rock Band that my friends will come over sometimes and play, but it's certainly not Maroon 5 quality.
Well, and so, you know, what have you been up to lately specifically? And where, I know, you know, your most recent gig in pro baseball was in Worcester, actually where I live, for the Worcester Red Sox. But, you know, when you're not doing that, where do you it's live and typically work during the baseball offseason?
Yeah, it's kind of a new experience for me after 6 years as a full-time broadcasting, media relations, marketing, production type stuff with the Fisher Cats. That's the Blue Jays AA in New Hampshire you're talking about. It's now kind of full-time freelance, I guess. It was a 9-to-5 job in the offseason with the Fisher Cats, and they were nice enough to let me do a couple games a week, maybe Friday, Saturdays. But now to have the freedom to really make my own schedule, I've been lucky enough to mix in a lot more. So we do probably on average 1.5 hockey games a week. Sometimes it's a Friday and Saturday with the Nesson game of the week, whether it's at UMass specifically. We sometimes do their stream. Sometimes it's UNH. Sometimes it's Lowell. And stuff I'm able to add this year with more availability is some UNH basketball. So they were very generous to bring me on for some of their hoops this year. And then UMass football and basketball on radio for home games as well. So I'm still kind of tabulating everything, but it's going to come out to an average of, you know, 3, 4, 5 games a week or so, which has been a great balance. It's a little bit strange not having an office to drive to every day at 9 a.m., but it's an adjustment I'm definitely getting used to.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's something that, you know, people who don't work in broadcasting don't know about, you know, just the lifestyle and what a hustle it is, and you know, how much downtime people have. And you know, tons and tons of broadcasters, you know, have, you know, side jobs. And you know, I've met tons of people who, you know, work in restaurants or at gyms, or you know, I was an Uber driver for a while, but people don't realize, you know, they think that if you're doing those types of things that you're a wannabe, but some people actually make it very high up the ladder and still struggle. And you know, how have you kind of managed that lifestyle?
Yeah, I was lucky at my tail end of my time with the Fisher Cats. They promoted me to vice president, so that was more of a good balance. It was more of an actual minor league baseball income than I thought I would ever reach. So that was definitely an adjustment. The Woo Sox, they have me on payroll from April to end of September. So when I work there, they pay me there, and it's definitely fair what they have me at. So it's kind of piecing it together. The budget, I mean, adding up everything, broadcasting alone, you know, it kind of puts me in the same neighborhood, I guess, of where I was when I started with the Fisher Cats. So it's piece by piece. It's definitely a lot of hustle to fill that schedule. So for right now, we're getting by, I guess, is what you could say. So haven't had to add any non-sports employment to the schedule, at least not yet. But I'll give an example from the pandemic when there were layoffs and the Fisher Cats had some pay reductions that kept me on staff. But we needed to make some more money. So I worked as a freelance graphic designer, just working remote online, making it was for a local baseball batting cage facility. So I was making graphics for them. Come on out. We'll teach you how to hit, all this kind of stuff. So that was a way to get some supplemental income.
You know, that's interesting. And people, again, people don't know, you know, what a hustle it is. I think also the other thing is, you know, in any of these really competitive industries, you know, whether you want to be a pro athlete or a rock star or a broadcaster or whatever, you know, you have to struggle every step of the way. But I think, you know, to really succeed, you have to kind of embrace that struggle. So, like, you know, you work a lot in minor league baseball. You look at the guys who play minor league baseball, you know, they make below the poverty line. You know, a lot of those guys, you know, unless they're like a first round pick and have a big signing bonus, a lot of those guys live with their parents in the offseason. You know, I used to play baseball. One of my buddies was an undrafted free agent who signed with the Orioles and played for a couple of their A-ball affiliates. He made $1,000 a month and lived with his parents in the offseason. And then obviously if you get called up to the show, I mean, I don't know what the exact league minimum is, but I think it's a few hundred thousand dollars a year. But, you know, I think in order to get through the minor leagues as a broadcaster or a player or get through the lower levels of any really competitive industry, like I said, you have to actually embrace the process. And I remember another guest I had on this podcast was Nate Ebner. He was the guy played in the NFL for the Patriots and Giants, and then also played rugby in the Olympics. Mm-hmm. And he said that if, you know, I mean, he won a Super Bowl, for example, with the Patriots. He said he thought about all of the hard work he put in over the years and injuries and suffering and, you know, setbacks. He said that took so much time that if the only reason you're doing that is for that moment, you know, when you're, you know, hoisting the Super Bowl trophy, that's such a short period of time compared to everything that you go through that it's not worth it. For it to really, really, really be worth it, you have to actually enjoy everything about it. He said, you know, he embraces getting up at 6 a.m. to work out. You know, he embraces doing his physical therapy to deal with the different injuries that he put his body through, you know, as a football player and a rugby player. And so I think, you know, anyone who just gets into broadcasting because they would just want to be at the highest level and live a comfortable life, they're never going to make it. And tons of kids who, you know, study broadcasting in school and have these big plans to be a broadcaster can't cut it. But, you know, how did you become, you know, passionate and kind of develop the mindset to be able to withstand the lifestyle?
Well, yeah, it's a great point. I always kind of go back to Charlie Day, the actor from Always Sunny in Philadelphia. He gave the commencement speech at Merrimack probably 10 years ago now. And he said, you know, graduating, it's going to be tough. You're not going to succeed right away. And who wants that? Everyone wants success right away, but that's not what people need. Because if you're, in his example, if he's getting a Hollywood role the minute he walks off a campus, then that's not nearly as enjoyable as working hard, finding out how difficult it really is to get exposure and get people's attention and get jobs. It just makes finding that success all the more rewarding at the end. So you give the Nate Ebner example. I mean, he might have been one of the happier guys on that team to be able to hoist that Lombardi trophy because of all he had been through. So for me, it's something I'm trying to do a better job of, enjoying the path that we've been on, but where we're at now. So, for instance, the Worcester Red Sox, it's a dream job for minor league baseball. They do such an awesome job of investing in the broadcast, putting on a good product. We're on NESN NESN Plus at least every home game, which is nuts for minor league baseball. So, but if I got this job right out of college, I'd be like, okay, well, this is how broadcasting is, and it would be very difficult for me to sustain happiness unless I was continuing to move up, which is, as we know, that means you have to go to the big league. So that's almost an impossibility. So to have gone through 10, 11 previous years of single A, double A when no one's listening, it's really helped me appreciate it more. And embracing the grind. I mean, I never liked getting up early for morning games. You know, I never liked having to worry about attendance and is this Facebook campaign working properly? So I wish I could get that mindset where you could love every step, but the fact is you're just not going to. So you have to find all the parts that you like the most and build on those and make the most of those.
Yeah, there's no question about it. You know, one of my favorite quotes also is, you know, everyone wants to be a beast until it's time to be a beast. You know, and it's almost the equivalent of, you know, if you're a professional boxer, I have no experience as a boxer, but, you know, typically people don't like getting punched in the face. If you want to be a champion boxer, your mindset about getting punched in the face has to be very different from the average person. If you don't like getting punched in the face, boxing is probably not the right profession for you. And, you know, again, to be elite in anything, you know, you have to be able to handle the parts that other people can't handle. That's what separates you. And, you know, it's funny also, I remember when I interned at NBC Sports Boston in college, I did some job shadowing. I'm actually blanking on the general, one of their anchors. Can't believe I'm blanking on his name. His first name was Kevin. Do you watch NBC Sports Boston at all?
Yes. Phil Perry's over there. I know he's one of their great anchors.
Kevin Walsh. Yeah. So this was, I'm 30 years old now. I'm acting like I'm 80 and my memory doesn't work. But Kevin Walsh, I actually very embarrassed. I forgot his last name. He was, you know, a great mentor for me while I was there. But he basically said, no one who actually broadcasts for a living sucks at it. You know, you're either good or you don't do it. So again, you know, you really have to have, you know, that commitment to your craft and that obsession. But, you know, also a lot of people ask, you know, about, like when I tell people what I do, they ask about, you know, what are your long-term goals? And, you know, I'm curious, you know, for me, I just want to get to a high level in something. It doesn't have to be a specific sport, but do you have, you know, specific goals of like, I was a fan of this team growing up, I want to be a broadcaster for them? Or is it more along the lines of you just want to, you know, do something at a high level, regardless of specifically what it is?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's the second part. And maybe when I was younger, I kind of point to teams. Oh, I want to do this job exactly. And then you get a little older and you realize, oh, yeah, I mean, that's maybe as likely as winning Powerball here with $2 billion on the line. If as hard as it is to make it to the highest level, just to specifically pick one team, I think it's impossible to live that way and try to move up that way. So yeah, just at highest level in general. And I guess around here, you know, my wife's family is from here. My family lives around here still. So with the past year with AAA Red Sox, being lucky enough to meet some people who believe in me in this market, I guess that feels like the most realistic path. But again, there's plenty of teams across the country, so you just kind of have to keep working hard and see what's out there, and then make those decisions if you're lucky enough to be able to make them. So yeah, it's not specific to the team, no.
Well, and you know, you mentioned you know, the Woo Sox, like we talked about earlier, and I remember also seeing you on the Red Sox pregame show with Tom Caron, you know, talking about some of the Woo Sox prospects. And you know, it's always really helpful. Like if you're, you know, for example, you know, I've been doing football games here in Massachusetts, you know, with the Massachusetts Pirates of the Indoor Football League. And obviously, and, you know, a lot of guys on that team are, you know, former NFL guys, you know, guys who played in the NFL for a year or two and then got cut. So it's, they don't have an affiliated minor league system in football the way they do in like baseball or hockey or some other sports. But it's essentially like the AAA of football, because it's a lot of guys who, you know, played in the NFL for a couple of years, or guys who were in camp and got cut, kind of like fringe NFL players, the same way AAA is a lot of fringe MLB guys and guys who actually have already played at that level. But, you know, I've done networking with, you know, Bob Soucy, the Patriots play-by-play guy, you know, the guy at the highest level of football in the New England area. And, you know, he's critiqued my reels. He's come on this podcast. He's been very generous with his time, but it's always helpful when you just reach out to someone like that to talk about broadcasting rather than ask for something. And I'll admit, like when I first got out of college, when I was, I don't know, in my early 20s, I would just reach out to people and ask for things and they'd stop responding. I learned the hard way to not do that. But how does that process go about of, you know, networking with guys already calling games or, you know, doing pregame shows or interviews in the big league?
Yeah, that's been one of the best parts about the job, especially the last couple of years, is getting to connect with some of the guys you grew up watching. And I guess the Worcester job is at a high enough profile level where people had reached out to me and said, hey, congratulations. There's a legacy behind this job, you know, good luck. And yeah, you talk about being younger and not exactly knowing how networking should be done or how to even go about it. I used to think that, okay, networking means I have to figure out who hires people at NBC Sports and then send them a cold email or give them a cold call. But those people are tough to get to by design. And at age 21, they don't want to, you're not good enough for them anyway, which is the truth. I certainly wasn't at 21. There are some standouts who are, but for me, just for my professional growth, not necessarily for job opportunities, but just reaching out to people, especially in this market, who have done it and are doing it at a really high level, that surprisingly for me has kind of turned out to give me some kind of cool opportunities. Tom Caron does Hockey East Championship Weekend on NESN, and he does the Bean Pot. So I was doing the playoff game before his playoff game. So I was covering the two teams he was going to cover the next week. So I said, "Hey, TC, big fan. Here is all my information on these teams. If you need any help," just because I know he does baseball a ton. He's going back and forth spring training. So I'm guessing he didn't have a ton of time to lock in on how those two teams were doing. So he appreciated that. And we got to talking from there. And then the next year I joined the Red Sox organization. So that was kind of a natural fit. So he's been a huge mentor to me, Tom Caron. So he's as nice in person as he seems on TV. And Bob Sosa is a former Paw Sox broadcaster. So he was nice enough to say hi to me at a game this past spring. So, I mean, those guys are just awesome. And it's really cool to see how down to earth they are. And it's the joke, right? Professional sportscasters, they're just like us, you know. I mean, it's guys like you and me, Lev, you know. It's just a matter of how hard they've worked, and they all admit how fortunate they are to have been noticed at the right place at the right time. So that kind of helps put it in perspective and let you know that some of your goals are within reach. It's not like they're superhuman or anything. So it's been a comfort. I'll throw a Will Fleming in there as well. He's been awesome, a Red Sox radio broadcaster and another former Paw Sox guy. That day I was on the pregame with Tom Caron. Will had me on with him and Joe for an inning in the radio booth. So that was a dream come true too.
You know, it's funny. We've also talked a lot about like how much of a hustle and how unglamorous you know, broadcasting is behind the scenes. But one other thing I want to ask you, how do you deal with the expectation versus reality? Because people who don't broadcast and know nothing about it probably think it's very, very different from how it actually is. The most common thing, you know, people say to me is like, they expect that I make more money than I actually make. Like, you know, when they heard that I interviewed Michael Strahan on that podcast or did, you know, ESPN games on, you know, ESPN Plus, they assume that you're wealthy and you live this cool lifestyle. And, you know, I've had people say, you know, I'm surprised, you know, you're on TV. I'm surprised that you drive a Toyota Camry. You know, I'm surprised that you have an iPhone 7. You know, people have all these expectations that are so different from reality. So how do you deal with that? The same way, like, my dad went to MIT. He got tired of people asking him, "Oh, so does that mean you're smart?" How do you deal with, you know, the expectations that people have for you when they hear about what you do? Because it's obviously not everything, it's cracked up to be behind the scenes.
Yeah, I guess not. I don't really run into that ever. I'm not quite the opposite, but I'll give you an example. The house I'm zooming with you now, we got this, what, 4 or 5 years ago, and the home inspector, when we're trying to buy it, is walking around and says, "Okay, house looks good." And he looks at me and says, "So what do you do for work?" And I said, "Sports broadcasting." And he goes, "Sports broadcasting? Don't quit your day job. There's no money in that." So I said, "Well, I am buying a house, man. I mean, I'm paying you." so it was, I think some people do kind of see it as, they call it a passion job, right? So I have a couple of friends. One works at an aquarium, you know. Another is an athletic trainer. We all went to school together. And in the last 4 or 5 years, I kind of heard this new category, a passion job. So, and that equals a quote unquote cool job, where in his case, you'd play with fish all day, or me, where I watch sports all day, but the money's not quite there. So I guess it depends how informed. So I don't know anyone who said, "Wow, ESPN Plus, you must be rich." That has never happened to me. So,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, it just depends. I don't know. Everyone sees things differently, but I think, and it's true with like people I know in other professions, I never try to give them advice or make assumptions on, you know, what their lives are like, because, or their careers are like, because you just don't know. And, you know, I think you have to do something. You have to do something to really know what it's like. I don't know. I've had a couple guys I've called college games with who, you know, for example, Jake Zimmer. Have you ever worked with him?
No, but I know the name. I'm sure he does great work.
Yeah. So he does college stuff all over, you know, the New England area. And then he has some type of non-broadcasting day job, but he also started recently doing PA, you know, for the Bruins at the actual NHL level, you know, not with an affiliate. And he said that, you know, people think because he's doing games at the Garden, he must be wealthy. And again, I think, though, that there are misconceptions about every profession and lifestyle, but there are more misconceptions and less public knowledge in really niche professions.
Yeah, I get that. And I guess the biggest reaction I usually get is, oh, man, that sounds like an awesome job. And I guess my when I was first starting out, when I was really not making much money down in Florida, where the cost of living was fortunately low, my dad always says that his friends would say, okay, so your son is a single A broadcaster. What does that pay any money? And all his answer was always, well, he never asked me for money, so I guess he's doing okay. So that was just kind of always it. We're just piecing it together, you know, and maybe I'm just a live within my means kind of guy. I don't, here's one thing I will say though. Yeah. That only recently has vacation and travel been able to be introduced into my wife and I. We went on a vacation to Nashville in October, and that was the first vacation we took that wasn't for a wedding since our honeymoon 5 years ago. So that's where I guess I'm able to get by, because we don't have a ton of luxury expenses, but you need that work-life balance. So that's kind of where it's kind of crystallizing a little bit as I get later in my career.
Oh yeah, no question about it. But you know, Tyler, obviously, you know, I appreciate you, you know, coming on the podcast today. And yeah, I know you're a busy guy. You know, all the different teams you work with, but you know, it's been cool to see, you know, some of the stuff you've told me about, you know, your hustle and, you know, being able to, you know, make your own schedule. You know, that there are pros and cons to that, but you know, some people can handle it, some people can't. But that's awesome that, you know, you've been able to, you know, make that living, you know, as, you know, a pure, pure freelancer. But, you know, obviously, Tyler, you know, I think our audience is excited to see what you do next, you know, maybe seeing you calling games full time in the show someday. Yeah, thanks again for joining us.
Of course, man, keep up the great work on the podcast and on your broadcast as well. It's great seeing you continue to develop and get well-deserved opportunities. But yeah, we'll be tuned in. Good luck the rest of the way. And yeah, have a great winter sports season, man.
Absolutely. All right. So once again, everyone, that is Tyler Murray. Thanks for tuning in.